Greet you all this morning in the name of Jesus. This morning I'd like to look at the book of Habakkuk, and I found it very interesting studying it. It's always been one of the minor prophets that sort of intrigued me, so I decided to look into it a little bit more and look at some of the history behind it. And so Habakkuk was a prophet around 612 B.C., this was after Assyria had already conquered Israel. If we look in 2 Kings 17, it shows us there that the Assyrians had sort of, they assimilated Israel into their society. So they kind of intermarried, they made these arrangements between them. And so Israel had already been destroyed, or I should say conquered. So if we look at 2 Kings 17. In verse 6, it says, "In the ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried away into Assyria and placed them in Hala and then Haber by the river of Gozan and the cities of the Medes." And then my Bible here says, "The sins of Israel and Judah." It says, "For so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God that had brought them out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods and walked in the statues of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out from the children of Israel and of the king of Israel, which they had made. And the children of Israel did secretly those things that were not right against the Lord their God, and they built them high places in all their cities, from the tower of the watchman to the fenced city, and they set them up images and groves in every high hill and under every green tree, and they burnt incense in all the high places as the heathen whom the Lord carried away before them, and wrought wicked things to provoke the Lord to anger, for they served idols whereof the Lord had said unto them, Ye shall not do this thing." So we see both Israel, nation of Israel, and Judah. I don't know if you all remember, but back when Rehoboam came to power, Israel and Judah had split into two nations. So Israel had already been conquered, and Judah's just kind of waiting or biding their time. Of course, they had their good kings and their evil kings. There was Hezekiah that came to power. Feared the Lord, and then there were lots of evil kings. So when Habakkuk was alive, Jehoiakim was actually king. And what I think I'll do is just go ahead and read about that. But basically what Habakkuk is, he has these questions for God, and his first question is, why are my people so wicked? Why is everybody around me so wicked? So I'll go ahead and read Habakkuk 1, and it says, "This is the burden that Habakkuk the prophet received in the vision. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not hear, or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me see iniquity? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife is ongoing and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted." Habakkuk is saying, my society, the people around me, just really bad out there. And my own people are doing terrible. They're oppressing each other. I mean, if we look at what Jehoiakim was, some of the sins that he was into. If we look at Jeremiah 36:20, you can see him burning the scroll. The Lord told the prophet to, "Hey, go take this message over to Jehoiakim," and Jehoiakim goes and burns a scroll. And yeah, chapter 36 of Jeremiah, verses 1 and 2, and it says, "And it came to pass in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, that this word came unto Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, Take thee a roll of a book, and write therein all the words that I have spoken against Israel and against Judah, and against all the nations from the day I spake unto thee, from the days of Josiah even unto this day." And then further down, he goes and they burn the law of the Lord in verse 23, and it says, "And it came to pass that when Jehuda had read three or four leaves, he cut it with the penknife and cast it into the fire that was on the hearth until all the roll was consumed in the fire. Yet they were not afraid, nor rent their garments, neither the king nor any of his servants, and heard all these words." So we have people that had the law of the Lord, the word of God, coming to them directly, very plainly, and they were burning it, they were destroying it. Jehoiakim was also unjust and unfair. He didn't treat his own people justly. So we go look at Jeremiah 22:13-17. It says, "Woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrong, that useth his neighbor's service without wages, and giveth him not for his work. Thus saith, I will build me a wide house and a large chamber, and cutteth out windows, and it is sealed with cedar and painted with vermilion. Shalt thou reign because thou closest thyself in cedar? Did not thy father eat and drink and do judgment and justice? And then it was well with him. He judged the cause of the poor and needy. Then it was well with him. Was this not to know me, saith the Lord? But thine heart are not, but thine eyes and thine heart are not, but for thy covetousness, and for to shed innocent blood, and for oppression, and for violence, to do it. Therefore saith the Lord concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, they shall not lament for him, saying, Ah, my brother, ah, my sister. They shall not lament for him, saying, Ah, Lord, or Ah, his glory." So Jehoiakim built himself a very nice palace, and what the Lord is saying here, it takes more than a palace to make a king. So you can't just go ahead and oppress everyone, make yourself a beautiful place to live, and claim to be king. He talks about his father, how his father was a just and righteous king and did what was right. Also lived in a palace, but did not oppress the people around him. There was lots of idolatry happening. There was Jeremiah 19:4-5. We see the other evils the people were into. It says, "Because they have forsaken me and have estranged this place and have burnt incense in it unto other gods, whom neither they nor their fathers have known, nor the kings of Judah, and have filled this place with the blood of innocents. They have built also the high places to Baal, to burn their sons with fire for burnt offerings unto Baal, which I commanded not, nor spake it, neither came it into my mind." So they were actually burning their children, killing their children, doing all this wickedness. And if I didn't say it already, Habakkuk and Jeremiah, Nahum and Zephaniah were all living right around that same time. So Israel had already been destroyed, and Judah was just kind of biding their time. Judah was just kind of waiting to see what would happen. And I didn't know this either, but Babylon actually attempted to invade Judah like three times. So I don't know what that's like. I mean, it sounds a little frustrating to me. Like, why don't you just, invade them once and get it over with? But it seems like the first time they came down through and they said, okay, you guys, of course, there's probably lots of fighting and bloodshed, but Jehoiakim says, I'll pay tribute. And he goes ahead, pays tribute. But then Pharaoh comes along and says, okay, I don't like Babylon either. I'm going to help you. So then Jehoiakim rebels. Babylon comes back again in 599. And then, 599, there was multiple forces coming against Judah. 598. Jehoiachin's son was captured. And 587, Jerusalem is finally completely taken over, and the captivity begins under Zedekiah. So it was like, multiple things happening. And, you just have to imagine yourself kind of being Habakkuk here, and, society's kind of going to, going to pieces all around you. Like, there's this injustice, people are oppressing each other, there's violence, there's bloodshed, there's idol worship, immorality, all these things happening. So the law is paralyzed, and so he's asking God. And the one thing that's really interesting is this conversation that Habakkuk has with God. He talks to God. He says, he's very honest with God. He says, Lord, this is really bad. What's happening around me? What are you going to do about it? So the Lord gives Habakkuk an answer. He says, look at the nations and observe. Be utterly astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would never believe, even if someone told you. For behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, the ruthless and impetuous nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are dreaded and feared. From themselves they derive justice and sovereignty. Their horses are swifter than leopards, fiercer than wolves of the night. Their horsemen charge ahead, and their cavalry comes from afar. They fly like a vulture, swooping down to devour. All of them come bent on violence. Their hordes advance like the east wind. They gather prisoners like sand. They scoff at kings and make rulers an object of scorn. They laugh at every fortress and build up siege ramps to seize it. They sweep by like the wind and pass on through. They are guilty. Their own strength is their God. So God has quite the answer for Habakkuk. Habakkuk's like, look, my people are so violent. And God is like, well, guess what? The Babylonians are coming. It's going to be a whole lot worse. The Babylonians are fierce and they're dreaded. And keep in mind, this was probably only about, from, 612 to 598, it was probably only about, at the most 15 years maybe till they were captured completely. So, the Lord was telling Habakkuk that the Babylonians are coming, and they're going to take over his people. And then Habakkuk then has this second complaint. He says, "Oh wait, we're not actually that bad when you compare us with them. We at least know who God is. We at least have some idea, of who we should be. The Babylonians, they're complete heathen. They're vicious. They're unfair. They're ruthless. Surely it won't wipe us out." And once again, we have this conversation with God, which I think is really interesting, just that we could use that as an example in our lives. Sometimes there's lots of people in the Bible who don't always have, nice prayers that they say to God. Sometimes they're complaining, they're saying, "Lord, why? Why are you doing this? Why is this happening to me?" Let's go ahead and read Habakkuk's second complaint. He says, "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God and my Holy One? We will not die. O Lord, you have appointed them to execute judgment. O Rock, you have established them for correction. Your eyes are too pure to look upon evil, and you cannot tolerate wrongdoing. So why do you tolerate the faithless? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You have made men like the fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler. The foe pulls all of them up with a hook. He catches them in his dragnet and gathers them in his fishing net. So he rejoices greatly. Therefore, he sacrifices to his dragnet and burns incense to his fishing net. For by these things his portion is sumptuous and his food is rich. Will he therefore empty his net and continue to slay nations without mercy?" So basically, Habakkuk is saying, well, Lord, in your righteous judgment, you can't wipe us out with the Babylonians, because Babylonians are so much worse than we are. They're wicked. And then he uses this illustration of fish in the sea. So basically, if you think about the fish, the ocean. There are lots and lots and lots of them, right? And then he's describing Babylon as the fisherman coming along with a net, and they're just scooping all these fish up indiscriminately. They're all in there flapping, and, you know, just all, you know, maybe one, some of them are, you know, being smothered or, you know, being injured in the net, and you know, they're just indiscriminately scooping them all up and doing as they will, just like a fisherman. And then he, you know, shows their idolatrousness yet. And then not only do they scoop up all the nations, but then they make sacrifices to their net and say, oh, well, this is such a great net that I have. You know, in other words, their might or their power that got them these conquests. So then Habakkuk comes back and asks the Lord for this answer. And then it's really interesting what Habakkuk does next here. So he goes up into his watchtower. So it says here in chapter 2, he says, I will stand at my guard post and station myself on the ramparts. I will watch to see what he will say to me and how I should answer when corrected. So here it says ramparts or watchtower. But anyway, he goes up into his watchtower. And the question is, why did he go up into his watchtower? Does anyone want to answer that? Why do you think Habakkuk went up into his watchtower after hearing what the Lord was going to do? Yeah, they might be coming today. Yep. So what a really good place to look to see when the judgment of the Lord was going to come, to, since he was a prophet, to look for the future impending judgment. The other possibility is sometimes when the Lord speaks to you, you're questioning what God is going to do. You need to go to a quiet place, somewhere that's away from the hustle and bustle of life. And you know, the question is, do we quiet our hearts before the Lord and listen to what he has to say for us? Because Habakkuk wanted an answer. He's asking the Lord, now wait a minute, you know, we're bad, but we're not that bad. How can you possibly send these Babylonians to take us captive? So he went up there to wait. And then it says, the Lord answered me, write down this vision and clearly inscribe it on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the vision awaits an appointed time, it testifies of the end, and it does not lie. Though it lingers, thank you. Though it lingers, wait for it, since it will surely come and will not delay. Look at the proud one. His soul is not upright, but the righteous will live by faith. So basically, God is saying, okay, this is for real. Write this down. Get it ready to go with a herald. Get it ready to go with a messenger and get sent out and distributed to everyone. Some have said that write clearly means make the letters really big and easy to read, but whatever the actual meaning is, it was supposed to be easy to understand and distributed out to all the people. It awaits an appointed time, and I believe the book of Zechariah, I think, also uses that phrase a lot, the appointed time. God says, though it lingers, wait for it. So that kind of spoke to me. How many of you have wanted to know what God's will is? I know my wife and I both got married a little bit later in life. We were about 27 and 28. And so we were waiting a while, right? And when you're, you know, 20 or 21, 8 or 9 years seems like an awful long time. It seems like eternity. But, you know, sometimes you have to wait for what the Lord is going to do. And it's not that he won't do it. It's just he's playing what we call the long game. If you read about what investors do sometimes, they don't. So there's some investors, right, that will, oh, this is the latest stock. Today it's Bitcoin or it's this other thing. And they'll jump on that. And then the next day or the next week, they're on something else, right? And then there's other investors that go in and they do what they call, they play the long game. They see something, they say, oh, that's going to do well. I'm going to buy into that and I'm going to sit on it. I'm just not going to worry about it because I made a good decision and it will come out in the long run. Businesses can do that too. Businesses can react, you know, day by day to whatever pressures come their way, or they can have a 10-year plan and try and say, okay, we're going to invest now so that in 5 years from now or 10 years from now, things will be going well for us. So there's that idea of the long game. And God is kind of like that too. Sometimes in our lives, the better thing is going to happen years down the road. So that's the first thing, you know, that God tells Habakkuk. He says, wait, because it's going to take time, but it's going to come to pass. And then to read on here, he says, look at the proud one. His soul is not upright, but the righteous will live by faith. And that verse gets used again in the New Testament. And the just will live by faith. So in the middle of these really rough times when there's injustice among your own people, there are hideous evil armies coming to get you in the future, your sister nation has already been destroyed, which was Israel. What are the righteous people to do? Well, they're supposed to live. They're supposed to keep going. They're supposed to keep walking, keep following God. Live can also mean survive, that the Lord will keep them and protect them. We know not necessarily in their lives, keep them alive, but that they are to keep walking and they're to continue to live by faith. In other words, they're not supposed to lose faith, even if things are dark and evil round about them, and that there's even more evil coming. But the just shall live by faith. And wealth indeed betrays him. He's an arrogant man, never at rest. He enlarges his appetite like Sheol and like death. He is never satisfied. He gathers all the nations to himself and collects all people as to his own. And then the Lord gives woes to the Babylonians. So he's like, okay, Habakkuk, you're right. The Babylonians are evil, but I'll take care of them later. And so here's all the things that the Babylonians are doing wrong. It says, woe to him who amasses what is not his and what makes him and makes himself rich with many loans. How long will this go on? Will not your creditors suddenly arise and those who disturb you awaken? Then you will become their prey. So that kind of plays into this thing that, you know, Babylon would came three times, right, and kept making these tribute agreements. And that must have been sort of profitable to them, or they probably would have wiped out Judah all in one shot. It sounds like they were very oppressive in the way that they took over nations and made them pay tribute. And then it says, because you plundered many nations, the remnant of people will plunder you, because your bloodshed against men and your violence against the land, the city, and all their dwellers. It says, woe to him that builds his house by unjust gain, to place his nest on high and escape the hand of disaster. You have plotted shame for your house by cutting off many peoples and forfeiting your lives. For the stones will cry out from the wall, and the rafters will echo it from the woodwork. So basically, they have built their house with the goods that they have conquered from these nations that they have oppressed. And says, woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by iniquity. It is not indeed from the Lord of hosts that the labor of the people only feeds the fire and the nations weary themselves in vain. For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. So there, we have these woes against Babylon, and then we have almost like a little break there when And like, oh, we all know that verse. Yeah, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And I think what it is, it's like a contrast against what Babylon is doing. So Babylon is sort of filling the earth with their evil and their bloodshed and all these things that they're doing and oppressing people. And then it says, but guess what? God is still in control. In the end, the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And that's a whole lot bigger than Babylon's empire ever was. And I think that's part of that, the just living by faith, that we remember those promises that God's way will conquer in the end. And then it goes on to more woes to Babylon. It says, woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it from the wineskin until they are drunk, in order to gaze at their nakedness. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. You too must drink and expose your uncircumcision. The cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you, and utter disgrace will cover your glory. And talking about the shame that Babylon puts on to others and how they'll be punished for that. For your violence against Lebanon will overwhelm you, and the destruction of animals will terrify you because of your bloodshed against men and your violence against the land, the city, and all the dwellers. What use is an idol that a craftsman should carve it, or an image, a teacher of lies? For its maker trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, awake, or to silent stone, arise. Can it give guidance? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet there is no breath in it all. And once again, we have the contrasting verse. Here's the idol. Babylonians are saying, you know, these idols are so great. You know, look, you know, we've made them and created them, and they're alive and they are helping us be victorious. And then we have the contrasting verse that says, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. So then we see that once again the contrast of the Lord versus the forces of the world around them. So the Lord is talking back to Habakkuk and saying that yes, the Babylonians will be punished. It will they will also get their due as well. The other thought here is, you know, we see a lot about the forces of the Babylonians, and this will come out in chapter 3, but the Lord also has his hosts, the armies of heaven, that do his bidding and are on his side. In chapter 3, we see it's finally Habakkuk ends the chapter with a song. So, and sometimes in our lives when we don't understand things, when we're kind of saying, you know, why God? Why are things happening? And we might even be questioning God. You know, well, God, I don't think that's fair. I don't think it should be like that. That's not, you're a just God, but why are you doing this? Once the Lord had answered Habakkuk, it's kind of like a Job moment where Job is like, but Lord, why am I suffering in all this? And then the Lord answers Job as well. Or if you would contrast Habakkuk with Jonah, Habakkuk learned quickly, right? Habakkuk listened to what the Lord told him. Jonah ran away and had to be in the belly of the fish before he heard what the Lord was trying to say to him. But Habakkuk responds to the Lord with a prayer and a song. And there's lots of musical terms here. The beginning it says it's Shigionoth, which I guess is, we don't know exactly what that means, but it's like a musical term. So in other words, it was supposed to be used in their communal worship. In other words, he's saying, let's save this song and let's use it in our worship of the Lord. At the very end, it says, to the choir master with stringed instruments. So that's another point that it was supposed to be a song that they were going to sing because it was to the choir master. And then also we have the word Selah repeated multiple times, which we think means that stop and think about that, meditate on about that. So we see Habakkuk responding to the judgments of the Lord with a song. So go ahead and read that this time. It says, this is the prayer of Habakkuk, the prophet, according to Shigionoth. O Lord, I have heard the report of you. I stand in awe, Lord, of your deeds. Revive them in these years. Make them known in these years. In your wrath, remember mercy. And what he's saying is, you know, in these current years of impression, in the future judgment coming, you know, keep your will alive, keep your work alive, I believe is what it's saying. And then in your wrath, remember mercy. You know, please be merciful to us in these judgments. And then he goes on to say, God came from Teman and the Holy One from Mount Paran from the south. His glory covered the heavens and his praise filled the earth. His radiance was like the sunlight. Rays flashed from his hand where his power is hidden. Plague went before him and fever followed in his steps. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations. The ancient mountains crumbled. The perpetual hills collapsed. His ways are everlasting. So the Lord is the all-powerful. He is the ruler of the earth. It says here, I saw the tents of Cushan in distress. The curtains of Midian were trembling. Were you angry at the rivers, O Lord? Was your wrath against the streams? Did you rage against the sea when you rode on your horses, on your chariots of salvation? You brandished your your bow. You called for many arrows. And here we have some references to the Lord's army, Selah. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and quaked. Torments of water swept by. The deep roared with its voice and lifted its hands on high. Sun and moon stood still in their places in the flash of your flying arrows, at the brightness of your shining spear. You marched across the earth with fury. You threshed the nations in wrath. You went forth for the salvation of your people. To save your anointed, you crushed the head of the house of the wicked and stripped him from head to toe. And there he talks about the salvation of his people. And I would much rather be on the side of the Lord's army than on the side of the Babylonian army. With his own spear, you pierced his head when his warriors stormed out to scatter us, gloating as though ready to secretly devour the weak. You trampled the sea with your horses, churning the great waters. And there it talks about horses again, and another reference to the armies of the Lord being much greater than the armies that are in the world today. I heard and trembled within my lips. My lips quivered at the sound. Decay entered my bones. I trembled where I stood. Yet I must wait patiently for the day of distress to come upon the people who invade us. So Habakkuk's response to the Lord. He said, Lord, I understand what you're going to do. You are much more powerful than the nations around us, and your will be done. And God is merciful, and God cares about the salvation of his people. And then he goes on, and then this last part here is famous. It's some of my favorite verses. And it says, though the fig tree does not bud, and no fruit is on the vines, though the olive crop fails, and the field produces no food, though the sheep are cut off from the fold, and no cattle are in the stalls, yet I will exalt in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like those of a deer. He makes me walk upon the heights, for the choir master with stringed instruments. So it's almost like Habakkuk starts in the valley, and then he goes up to his watchtower, and then he ends at the end here. He says, he makes me walk upon the heights. So he's kind of on the mountaintop here at the end. So the Lord can take us through those things in our lives. But what he's saying here is a little bit like if we would say, even if my bank account is drained, you know, I don't have any food to eat. I don't know where my next meal is coming from. I'm homeless. I don't have a job. People around me are against me. Even though all these things are going wrong in my life, I will still rejoice in the Lord. And the Lord is my strength, and he will make me walk on the high places. So I thank you and I appreciate your attention here this morning.